Hello and welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. There's a lot of innovation taking place in the real-time payments landscape, and not just on the consumer side of things, but within the B2B sector as well. To speak to the trends we're seeing, I'm joined by Mike Cressy, head of B2B and money movement at FIS, and Brian Riley, co-head of payments at Javelin Strategy and Research. They're going to drill down on real-time and faster payments and speak to the opportunities that are out there for FIs and consumers. They're also going to dig into the role technology providers play in money movement innovation, as well as what you can expect over the next decade. It's great to have you both here. Mike, we're going to be chatting a lot about real-time and faster payments, but I really want to kick things off first in terms of, you know, the latest trends that you're seeing in B2B payments on a global scale.
I really appreciate the question. And ultimately, I do have the opportunity in my role within FIS to travel the world, meeting with a number of financial institutions and corporate clients that are really offering the next generation of business-to-business payment solutions to the marketplace. And so as I travel around and as I look at the innovations that are being done in the market, there's a couple that really jump out to me. The first is the variety of real-time payment schemes that are being spun up all across the world. And ultimately, the United States with FedNow and RTP from the clearinghouse that most folks here are familiar with is behind a number of other countries and geographies where real-time payments affiliated around ISO 20022 and the message payload that that can carry from a remittance standpoint is really much more prevalent and much more adopted. And one of the things that I'm seeing about that uptake of real-time payments is not just the remittance payload, but the fact that that is an immediate payment and it's a guaranteed payment so that the corporation that's receiving that money, or in a business-to-consumer context, the consumer that's receiving that money receives it right away. Now, the one difference that I'm seeing across the US and the rest of the world is that in most cases, countries have actually mandated the move to that real-time scheme to be able to use it not only for payments out, but for payments in and also requests for payment. I don't expect the United States to end up mandating that. So I think the adoption here within the US around real-time payments is going to be more focused around the use cases that get created from various interactions between specific industries, and more to come on that. And then the second major advancement that I'm seeing both across financial institutions offering solutions to their corporate clients as well as corporate clients directly is really the continued evolution of automation of the back office of accounts receivable and accounts payable processes. And so whether that's things like collections management or dispute management or cash application, I'm really seeing a lot of folks re-examine where do we have people-heavy processes within our organization that we can actually look to technology solutions to help drive automation around them. So those are really the things that I've seen in the market. Brian, what would you add to that?
Well, you know, when you look at real-time payments and the U.S. in the context of it, really the U.S. market is the big enchilada when it comes with payments, just by sheer volume. So I do agree we're not at the forefront of it, but getting it set into a market such as this is really significant. And as FedNow starts to roll in, it kind of expands that whole play of real-time payments into a wider range of banks. So that's going to be really interesting to see. The immediacy of payments, there's a dark side to that too, in that many of them become irrevocable. And that's the problem we've seen in the industry as this starts. But, you know, I watched you on a link that you did that. I thought it was really neat. You compared money movement to the artery system. I thought that was a good analogy because it really does work through the whole process. It was a good illustration. But there were a couple of takeaways I had on that, and maybe you could talk about for a few moments, Mike, because you talked about three core things. That was my takeaway. And talking about the simplicity that's essential here, and also the security in the process. These are not irrefutable payments. You really have to worry. And then the general visibility of the function. But could you spend a few minutes just tying that into your last couple of moments?
Yeah, 100%. And I appreciate you calling that out. So one of the things that I've seen as the various real-time payment capabilities have spun up around the world is typically it starts from a consumer-to-consumer standpoint, where consumers are looking to give other consumers money in real time. And ultimately, that ends up being manifested in an app that's typically sitting on a smartphone that's really simple to use, requires zero training, and is something that you can start activating and start using within a minute or two of actually signing up. Then you see it progress to consumer to business, where I, as a consumer, my power is about to be shut off, or my cable's been shut off because I forgot to pay my bill, and I want an immediacy of being able to very simply pay that bill and be able to make sure that that turns right back on and that I can consume that service. And so that typically manifests itself in a very simple experience as well, whether that's a request for payment that comes in from the biller, or that's just me initiating that payment. But for some reason, as we then pivot to the business is the person initiating, or the commercial entity, government entity, is the one initiating the disbursement or the payment to a consumer in a B2C context, or to another commercial entity in a B2B context, suddenly there's all sorts of back-end systems and other complexities that get added into the process that can actually cause software providers like ourselves and other solution providers to over-engineer the process. And so for me, simplicity needs to be a fundamental design principle, so that it's very easy for corporates and it's very easy for financial institutions to connect to and to put in place the various rails for real-time payments. And we need to keep simplicity in place as the overall design methodology or the overall design principle. The second area where we get the security, ultimately, most of the fraud systems that exist in the marketplace today were done on the basis of more batch-based payments. When you look outside of the card world, inside the card world, real-time ability to score transactions is obviously embedded into that entire process. But it hasn't been there in the historical treasury solutions, whether that's check, whether that's ACH, or even whether that's wire to a certain extent. And so what we're seeing is a migration of more of the card-based technology solutions being evaluated and being looked at to sit across the real-time payment modalities to make sure that we're actually doing that same level of real-time fraud scoring. And so I'm seeing that as the next evolution of fraud management, really card-type real-time fraud scoring applied into those commercial treasury payment types. And then lastly, I think that we really are working hard now as an industry to figure out what's the best way to leverage the data that's coming from these payments to give insights to financial institutions, and ultimately to give cash flow visibility to the corporates that are using these solutions or commercial entities that are using these solutions. And so whether that's a central payment store or whether that's a data lake that's been put in place, to really be able to drive those insights. And so I think simplicity is a design principle. Security and making sure you have the right real-time technologies being applied that are already out there and exist and just need to be repurposed, along with visibility, is critical, both when you're talking about the real-time payment schemes, but really when you're talking about the arterial network of money flows globally.
And that really nails it, because there's a significant shift as you go from the consumer world to the business world. You're going from the consumer world, high volume, low value transactions, now moving into a world of low volume, high value transactions. And that's really significant shift. And you know, on the card part, the card accounting requires a lot of accruals to be done to give that clearances. And that's something that real-time payment is a shift in, because it's no longer the accrual accounting where I can hold things for 3 days and clear. It's getting the money moving rapidly and clearing and settling in the same time.
Yeah, that was great. I agree.
I'd like to drill down on real-time and faster payments a bit more. Mike, as schemes roll out globally, what opportunities do you see for financial institutions, commercial entities, and consumers?
Yeah, it's a great question. And one of the things that is most glaring to me is 20 years from now, I as a consumer, or I as the CEO of a business and my finance department, should be able to send money to anyone or any entity anywhere in the world on a real-time basis in a secure and simple way. And we'll be there, right? That's where this is all heading. That's where we'll ultimately get to. But there's barriers in place right now to our ability to get there. We've talked about some of them from a simplicity's perspective and from a security perspective, but the biggest barrier to start is interoperability. So even within the United States market, even though the Clearinghouse's Real-Time Payments Network, RTP, and even though FedNow are both ISO 20022 message format-based systems, those systems are not interoperable. You cannot send a message directly on RTP and have it just map over then to FedNow. Those implementations look somewhat different. And then as you go globally, even though there's a huge opportunity to take out so much middle infrastructure from correspondent banking and third-party services that are extracting fees and revenue on the payment that you're trying to get from one part of the world to the other part of the world. Even though there's so much opportunity to take them out, you can't currently, because ultimately, even though the end messaging is all ISO 20022, there's no interoperability between those different global networks. And so that's the first one, right? Is I really think there's an opportunity for us as an industry to really start to lean in. Once these schemes are spun up and established, which they are now, it's really driving an industry coalition globally to make sure that we drive interoperability so there's not so many system hops and so many entity hops that have to happen in a transaction. The second is, and I talked about this a bit in the beginning, is really a clear articulation of the use cases that are really going to drive the adoption. So Brian is spot on. With FedNow coming in, I expect to see much more adoption of the solution for real-time payments across the financial institution ecosystem, because people were waiting for the Fed to come in with their solution before they came in and said that they wanted to plug in. But the reality is that without a mandate, and there won't be a mandate in the US to use real-time payments, we have to figure out what are the right use cases that make real-time payments as a transaction mechanism a better solution than same-day ACH, or a better solution than a wire, as an example. And a lot of that plays into request for payment for a bill is a classic one we've talked about. But in that case, just using as an example, a Verizon or an AT&T or a Comcast or a DirecTV, you name your provider, they need to have it built into their backend ERP system that they're actually requesting a payment from a consumer that that consumer is then paying. And that whole link and that whole chain needs to be set up such that the consumer is seeing their bill balance change in real time, just as if they'd made a card payment through the website, and to get that service turned back on. So request for payment is a use case. And I think there's certain industries where having a very large remittance payload that really talks about the background behind the payment, whether it's a detailed explanation of benefits or whether it's a large complex order that was being paid for, in those industries where those invoice stubs, so to speak, or those check stubs, so to speak, are thousands of invoices long and have complex information, those are perfect use cases for real-time payments, not just for the immediacy, but also for the remittance payload that's carried. And then lastly, I think that we really have to use those use cases and hold them up as why they're valuable. Who's benefiting? Is the payee benefiting? Is the payer benefiting? Ideally, both are benefiting with more predictability in their cash flows, both in and out. And we've got to talk about that value actively in the industry so we start to see that adoption occur around those use cases. Brian, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, particularly when you go cross-border on this, that's when things get interesting, because you're dealing with different jurisdictions and ensuring that the fees on both sides, for example, or the clearance requirements are coordinated really says this is a tough thing to venture on your own, and you do need experts helping facilitate this. And I really think that's something that's important here. You know, being able to move a little bit different than being a consumer wanting to move money to their parents in the Philippines, right? This is potentially a business-to-business transaction that might involve 6 digits or 7 digits worth of revenue moving back and forth. Yeah. And that's certainly not an area to take lightly.
Agreed.
Mike, you've spoken about money movement quite a bit. I'm curious, what's the role of technology providers and money movement innovation, and where should technology providers focus?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, right? Because there's a lot of shiny objects out there that will get the technology providers, such as ourselves, attention. We need to be very careful about not chasing after a shiny object while at the same time really focusing on core innovations that will take place. The first thing that we really need to focus on is how do we think differently about what our end state is going to be? Today, there are economic interests of all parties, financial institutions, corporations, technology providers, in a certain extent, to keep things status quo. And it's the classic sort of fear of change mentality where I understand how this works. I understand how this process works. I understand how I, as a financial institution, am driving revenue and driving customer value to my customers off of how things work today. I understand how I, as a technology provider, am providing value to my financial institution and my corporate clients by driving these individual technologies. And ultimately, we need to think differently and not be constrained by our existing lines of business, by our existing revenue streams. We've got to rethink the model of how does money flow around the world and how can we simplify it? So the first thing that I would say is, as technology providers, let's break outside of our boxes of our historical product lines. As financial institutions, let's break outside of the boxes of our treasury services and our retail services, and let's start thinking about money flows across the world in a completely different way. I think that the second thing is we really need to ensure that every capability that we develop benefits the originating party of the transaction, benefits the receiving party of the transaction, even if that does not benefit individual hops that have to take place in that transaction across correspondent banks or other third-party intermediaries. It's really, really important that as technology providers, we focus on the value for the originator and the value for the receiver, and then make it as clean as possible between those two, minimizing the number of hops across technology platforms, minimizing the number of hops across entities. And then really the last area is one that I've touched on and I'll probably close on as well as we get to other questions, is making sure that everything we're designing is simple for my 19 or 20 year old to pick up and start using immediately, like they would be able to use an app on their phone. Even though it's a business facing application, someone working in an accounts payable department, someone working as a controller, as a treasurer, that using the solution that we're providing or that a technology provider is providing is as easy as using a solution that's on this phone that I downloaded and qualified in to use within 1 to 2 minutes. And ensuring along with that simplicity that you have the real time transaction monitoring and scoring that needs to take place, because to Brian's point, a lot of the payments flowing across this ecosystem are irrevocable. And so you need to make sure you've got the right entity up front, and then obviously driving transparency around all of that. So those are really the thoughts that I think technology providers need to have in their heads in terms of, let's get outside of our traditional way of thinking. Let's make sure that we're really thinking about how is the originator and the receiver benefiting. And then lastly, making sure that we're designing everything simply and safely. Brian?
Well, I think that really nails it. And you know, when you look at the elegance of a credit card transaction, people swipe and they just assume it goes down the process, but there's a lot that goes on beyond that velvet curtain. And when you're dealing with money movement across jurisdictions, you know, business to business environment, it's much more complex, but it still has to have that same elegance as the transaction goes through. And I think that's what you summarized really well, Mike.
Thanks.
As we come to an end, I'm going to ask you to do something kind of difficult. I'm looking to a future a bit. Mike, to start off with you, what's your vision for where global money movement will be 10 years from now?
So I appreciate you asking me that. I had painted a vision of 20 years from now. And ultimately, I think that 10 years from now, we'll be halfway there, right? And I'll re-articulate that and repaint it, because I think that it's important that we as an industry drive towards this, which is the first being interoperability. We're spinning up all of these individual schemes, whether it's in the European area, whether it's in Australia, whether it's in the Nordics, that are real-time payment-related schemes that are all based on that ISO 20022 messaging. We need to make sure that the different organizations, whether it's SEPA, whether it's P27, whether it's in the US, the clearinghouse and the Fed, that we all design interoperability amongst our systems so that transactions can flow seamlessly across the various schemes. The second is we will continue to drive towards immediacy. I think all of us, if we think back 20 years ago, the concept of me being able to automatically stream any movie from my phone anywhere in the world through any of a number of streaming services so that I didn't actually have to have a DVD that I was putting in my laptop was not something that we saw materializing really quickly. And within 10 years, we were absolutely there, right? If you think back to what would then be about 15 years ago, or 10 years ago. So I think immediacy, the immediate gratification, the immediate nature of payments, the immediate resolution so I can move on to my next thing, that's going to continue to play really relevant. And I think that that's really going to be a major force. Just that natural human inclination for immediacy is going to be a real force behind powering real-time payments. And then lastly, it's really, I'm going to see a very, very efficient system, right? So low cost of a transaction going from one party to another, not so many intermediaries for foreign exchange, not so many intermediaries for being able to take payments from different geographies. So 10 years from now, we'll be on our path to me being able to send anyone money anywhere in the world at a very low cost, in a way that is safe and simple.
Thank you so much again for joining us and for sharing your insights and perspective. A lot to see over the next 10 years, but a lot to look forward to as well. Thanks again, and we hope to have you back on soon.